Welcome to the Stripe It Like It's Hot podcast with your host, Cam Roberts.
What's happening, Pod Squad? Thank you for listening in. Welcome to episode number 16 of Stripe It Like It's Hot. I hope wherever you are, you're happy, healthy, and you have a big old supply of traffic paint. Oh, man. It's rough right now. I mean, anywhere in North America, with a very, sounds like very few exceptions, it's pretty rough. So hopefully you guys are finding paint okay. Keep calling those stores, man. Put your names on waiting lists. Get whatever you can. Be proactive as possible. Hopefully there's light at the end of the tunnel. Well, there always is light at the end of the tunnel, but hopefully that light is coming quicker than longer, because we all need some paint. Thank you for listening, guys. So if you haven't listened before, make sure you're following us on Instagram and the Facebook. We're there, Stripe It Like It's Hot, or on Instagram, Stripe It Podcast. And yeah, you'll find some of our posts there about our contest that's coming up at the end of August. So make sure you know all about the details, the photo contest, all that good stuff. Very excited for today's episode because I stole an interview with somebody really cool. Literally last night, was that 2 nights ago? I guess it was 2 nights ago now. I don't remember. Anyways, I was on Facebook. I was watching a live video from somebody on my friends list, and Brian Hess popped on the live video, and he commented during the live, make sure that this story, you take as much time as possible in relating this story, because he said, I'm stuck at an airport. I missed my flight by something ridiculous, like 30 seconds or something. So he was stuck at an airport in, I believe, Atlanta for a couple hours. So me, being me, you know, kind of snarkily messaged him and said, you know, if I wasn't a total jerk after, you know, he was up at 3:30 in the morning that day and he wasn't going to get home till midnight now. I said, you know, if I was a jerk, I would ask you to come on my podcast for 15, 20 minutes so I can steal some of your brain power. But you should probably just go home and, you know, focus on decompressing and get some rest, man. But in typical Brian Hess fashion, he messaged me, said, DM me the link. I'll be on. So, pretty cool treat today, guys. 15 minutes with Brian Hess. I feel really bad because, I mean, this guy was, he had just a crazy day. He was up at 3:30 in the morning, flew across the country, had a meeting, trying to get back, missed his flight, so I don't think he got back till after midnight, 12:30 in the morning, so almost a full 24 hours, but I was able to steal 15 minutes with him and ask him a couple critical questions that I think are super important to get into the minds of business owners, not just in striping, anything in asphalt. This guy is at the top of the game right now for a reason. Brian Hess is awesome. Now, just briefly, guys, I don't really want to get into the whole soup to nuts about what's going on with the paint shortage and why, because it is a complicated subject. It takes a lot of time. We've already talked about it a little bit with on previous episodes. We've had Bunky Vodica on from Excel Paint, the national sales manager. He described some of the things that we're seeing in the market and why things are unavailable. But I do want to address something that's come up very recently, which is price increases. Price increases are happening. Maybe you're one of the few and you're lucky, and wherever you are, wherever you get your paint, you haven't been served a price notice increase, or you haven't had those price jacked up by now already. If that has not happened to you, that's fantastic. But guys, the whole reason why paint is in such short demand is there's not enough raw material to produce it. I mean, when Texas had its freezing episode in February, that wiped out major, major production aspects of paint. Now, all paints, not just traffic paint, but all paints. So when you don't have the raw materials to produce it, there's an increase in demand for the raw materials. Just as an example, guys, one of the major ingredients in your solvent-borne paint is pure acetone, or propanone, as it's also known. And the world overall produces about approximately 7 million tons of acetone a year, okay? 7 million tons produced in the world. The United States is responsible for about 1.8 million of that. Most of it comes from Asia, a little bit in Europe. So when that's just one example, right? That's just acetone. And I'm not even suggesting that what happened in Texas is directly responsible to acetone. But the point is, acetone, one of the major ingredients in the world, when you have something that goes immediately down in supply because of a natural disaster or increase in demand, that naturally is going to put more demand on the production in places like Asia, like in Europe. So you got to kind of zoom out and look at the whole picture. A price increase, guys, is kind of inevitable. It's not a paint company trying to shaft you. Paint companies are multi-billion dollar companies for a reason. They're out They're trying to sell products to you. They're not out to try and gouge you, because there would be no paint stores if everyone took that approach. So when you, if you got a price increase from Sherwin or PPG or Deluxe or wherever you buy your paint, I mean, if you haven't got it, expect one. Guys, there will be a paint increase price coming. You need to prepare for it now. Be proactive. You know, maybe that means putting your quoting window at a shorter time frame. Some people quote it's good for 60 or 90 days. Maybe you need to drop that down to 30 or even 2 weeks. And then put that into your sales process to follow up with people after 2 weeks and say, hey, you know, we still have this proposal for you. We're concerned about the price of materials right now. Nothing is, it's hard to get. We're worried the price is going to go up. Would you like to proceed with your project? So be as proactive as possible, guys. All right, 15 minutes with Brian Hess. Let's go.
It is ultimately important for you to look at your goals, truly what you want to do in your life, and then look at the people who you spend the most time with in your life and figure out if that lines up.
What's up, brother?
What's up with you, man?
Just living life, man. Just living life. Sitting here plugged into a charger in the airport. My phone's been dead like 3 times today.
Yeah.
Me and this guy right here, we missed the flight by like 2 minutes. Yeah. What are you gonna do?
Well, I'll tell you what I'm gonna do. I'm gonna be a jerk and be like, hey, you got nothing better to do. Even though you're dog tired, why don't you come on and chat for 15 minutes?
Bro, this is great, man. It's a good way to pass the time.
This is great. The guy who was up at, what time were you up this morning, Brian?
3:30.
Ay, ay, ay. What time is it now? Where are you? You're in Atlanta right now?
I'm in Atlanta. Yep.
Good grief. Okay.
In Atlanta, I'll land in Pittsburgh at 12:43. I get home at like 2.
Unreal. Unreal. Let's make this, I want to make this snappy. Out of respect for you and, you know, you're not passing out dog tired.
Well, I got 2 hours. I'm good. Oh.
Yeah, will you be awake at the end of tour? No, we're going to keep, we're going to do like 15, 20 minutes.
Yeah, we're good.
There's one thing. First off, I'll say this. I'm a person who doesn't like to receive a lot of compliments. Therefore, I sometimes hold back from giving them. Brian Hess, what you have done for the asphalt industry, absolutely love what you're doing. You are doing something really special. And I you probably hear that a lot, but I truly mean it. Even though I'm stealing you for 15 minutes when you're dog tired, sitting stranded at some airport somewhere, I am very grateful you hopped on. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, brother. Thank you, man. I appreciate it. Trying to do whatever we can, man, to move it forward, you know, and put things on another level for our industry. And that's it's always been a goal of mine, dude. And you know, when I'm out on job sites and I see guys in the field that inherently don't look at themselves at the level that they should, right? Mm-hmm. You know, like they're working on a crew and they see themselves, you know, as a laborer as opposed to someone that like is a critical part of a team. I want to change that for those guys, you know, any way that we can, and bring, you know, the highest level of respect to our industry that we can. And I think we're on our way to doing this.
Beautiful. Beautiful. So there's something I really want to pick from you in these 15 minutes that I think is just, I don't think it's talked about enough with you. So small tangent first. So I'm in the striping industry. This is a striping podcast. So a lot of guys get into it with, because they have the field experience. They've worked for somebody, they've done it for years. They decide to start their own thing and they struggle. They struggle mightily because it's a beast to go from the technician to the manager to the entrepreneur. What fascinates me about you is you were the total opposite. Like you when you started Pavement Group, like what, you were not doing anything asphalt, is that correct?
So when I got into the industry, in 2011. And I couldn't have told you the difference between asphalt and concrete, bro. Like literally, I mean, I knew there was a difference. I knew it was a different color. I knew it was a different makeup, but I couldn't have told you the details of how that was. So yeah, you are correct. When I jumped into the industry, I knew nothing. I mean, I grew up around construction my whole life, but I didn't know anything. And to this day, I couldn't operate a paver if you paid me $10 million.
Yeah. But you wear that with a badge of honor. See, there are people who would hear that and maybe be critical of that, as how is somebody who's never run the paver going to run the paving company? But your living example, like, how does that work? Explain it to us. Like, how do you go from not having that foundation of growing up with it your whole life and turning it into what is now, what was the post today? It's now one of the top 50. It was awarded by the Pavement Magazine today, correct?
Yeah, top 50 paving, seal coating, striping, and pavement repair companies. We got all four.
How does it work? That's the question. How does that happen? Describe that process.
Yeah, I think it's easy, man. I would give this advice to anybody, and is do what you're really good at, you know, and not to say that you shouldn't learn the other things, like, you know, so I've always been pretty successful on the sales side of things in our industry. And so just like anything, man, if you sold a bunch of striping jobs and you didn't perform them, you would still learn the challenges that come along with, you know, having that, right? You learn the challenges of selling a job incorrectly, or something that you miss on a job that, you know, you should have seen. As a salesperson, you still have to project manage and plan and execute the job, right? Even though you're not the person performing the work, the rest of it is still there. And so for me, it just, you know, it just fell into place, man. I took so many at bats by selling so much that the you know, kind of natural progression of how you learn how things work is that you get yourself into some trouble, you know, like you get into jobs that are a little bit, you know, out of what your knowledge base is. And so, but as you take so many at bats, man, you end up, you know, learning the business. And so I always leaned into what I was good at. I never worried about the other stuff. You know, for me, I relied heavily on the guys that did know that stuff. And I have the utmost respect for those, for the guys that do, you know, understand this craft at the level that I don't. Now, vice versa, we can't exist without each other, man. And that's the biggest thing is, you know, field and, you know, field operations and sales has always been, you know, kind of an area of conflict almost in construction. And I've tried to, you know, really be a liaison to solve that problem for us, because when there's mutual respect there, it just works really, really well.
I love what you just said. Like, was this basically, here's what my interpretation is. Like, you saw a problem in the industry and went out and solved it. Is that the simplest way of putting it?
Yeah. I mean, so when I came into the industry, man, I didn't know anything about the technical side of things. So like how everyone else was selling, I couldn't sell that way. Like, I couldn't talk to them about the technical stuff that every other salesperson was talking to customers about. So I always say this, like, it was actually a blessing, because I had to actually ask people what their real problems were. And when they told me what their problems were, they weren't ever really related to the work. They were always related to the process and the customer service and the communication and all the rest of it. And I don't think anybody was really listening to them to say, these are the real problems, right? Like, you know, they don't care what kind of trucks you have. They don't care. I mean, they care, but they don't really care, right? At the end of the day, they expect, if you're sitting at that table with the customers that we service, you've earned the right to be there. They expect you know how to do the work. What they're really looking for is what's above and beyond that. You know, what is the process? How are you going to make my life easier? How are you going to solve my biggest problems that nobody's actually asking me about?
Yeah,
that's the key. And it's the same, dude. I would challenge you to say it's the same in every area of construction, not just paving, is that customers' problems aren't really being addressed most of the time. We're so focused on the work that we miss what they really want.
That is, in my young experience, I've noticed the same thing. It's work's important, but it's not the most important. Man, so that's the other thing I've always wondered about you is, when I started working with my business coach, one of the first questions he asked me was, what's your mission and your vision for the business? And I sat there with this dumb look on my face, like, Because it hit me like a load of bricks. I didn't have a mission or a vision. When you started this process, was this the vision? Was this the mission? Or was it something that evolved over time?
Yeah, I would say it evolved over time, man. Just because I was new to the industry, I didn't really know enough to have a mission or a vision right out of the gate, you know? But once I started to understand the problems that existed, I instantly, man, because I came from a technology background, and I instantly knew that I could solve all these problems with technology, right? Like by leveraging technology, creating transparency in the process, and creating a customer experience like they had never seen before, I knew that I could dominate the space just based on the feedback that I was getting, right? And as we started to do that and implement the technology, it just took off like a rocket, man. And everybody that I was talking to was like, how many properties can you handle? Or, you know, how much work can you take on? And, you know, it became different questions, right? And that's, you know, one of the things that I always say to people that ask me questions like this, I always say, you know, focus on causing one problem at a time, right? The first problem is get too much work that you can't handle it. Then you can solve that problem, right? But until you get that problem, don't worry about having, you know, don't worry about that. Like, you know, but as you sell this way and you create a great customer experience and you drive, you know, technology into the process that creates transparency and better communication and all the things that customers are actually looking for, the problems that come from that are natural, right? Which is you're going to end up having too much work. And then you have to, you know, you kind of have to reinvent that process. Mike was talking about on the live tonight, right? I was like, you know, that company is going to reinvent itself a bunch of times because as it grows, it has to turn into something different to be able to support that. But yeah, my mission became ultimately, how do we get property and facility managers home to their families faster than any other contractor? And how do we build a business that makes people feel respected and taken care of and safe? And, you know, that's another thing in the construction space that I saw that was different. It was like, you know, there was just a different kind of approach, right? That old school contractor approach of like, well, they're going to do what we tell them because that's just the way it is, you know? And I feel like, you know, the world has evolved so much from that, you know, in construction, we need to adapt to the times too. And, you know, people should feel part of that process and they should feel heard and respected and, you know, invested in and all that stuff. So from a training standpoint, that's kind of where Top Contractor School came from. It was a way for me to give back the contractors that were doing work for us and helping us bid jobs across the country. And it was a way for us to give back to our employees by giving them the best training that's available anywhere in the industry. And so, you know, you get the best of both worlds. I always say we have really three sets of customers in our world. We have the customer themselves, the subcontractors that work with us are also, you know, we can't live without them. And then our employees on our own team. And if we don't take care of all three, then we're going to lose.
Yeah, I get it. I get it. Dude, I lost my timer, but like we're already close to 15 minutes. I'm bent on keeping this short out of respect for your sanity. And like, you're going to pull like a 21-hour day today. But here's the real meat, what I wanted to get to. And it's funny you mentioned Top Contractor School because you could use this as a plug for it if you'd like. But so something I see in the striping with guy, like striping's an easy industry to get into, lower cost, right? You can find machines. A little tricky this year to get paint, but that's another story. But guys that get into it, they struggle. They struggle with every process you were just describing, delivering the experience, bringing more value to people. If somebody's out there right now, maybe they're a one-man operator or a two-man crew, small business striping, they want to grow, they want to scale. But they're struggling and they don't know the best way. They're stuck in, you know, that work first mentality. What's the best thing that you would suggest to somebody? It doesn't even have to be striping, but in an asphalt related trade, they want to grow. What's the best thing they can do to ramp it up?
It's a couple step process answer, but it's number one is identify the right clients. The biggest mistake I see people make is chasing anything. As opposed to really taking the time to figure out like who are your ideal clients, right? So like as a striping contractor, it would be easy to figure out who's doing restripes and how do I get in with these maybe chains that are doing 30, 50, 100 of those at a time, right? That's an easy way to scale. Mm-hmm. So to identify those clients. And the second part of it is you have to have a clearly defined sales process. It doesn't matter if you're a field guy or a sales guy. It's not about being a fancy sales guy as people think it is. It's about literally just starting a conversation with someone. And here's the nugget of gold. Ask them questions that are meaningful and then listen. And they will tell you exactly how to help them. And when you figure out how to help them, ultimately that is sales, right? People think that sales is some, you know, maneuvering way to get somebody to choose you to do business with. It's not that. It's about solving problems and helping people. And I think that we are all sold by people who aren't very good salespeople so often in our lives that we have this picture of sales that's incorrect. The very best salespeople, man, just solve problems the best. And they listen more than they talk. They ask meaningful questions and they just genuinely want to help people. That's, dude, you're going to be successful because you genuinely want to help people, whether it's other Stripers or customers or whatever it is. When you take a servant approach to anything, it's very easy to get business. It's very easy to scale your business. And so that's the two things I would say. Number one, choose the right customers. And then just simple, you know, a very simple but well-defined sales process of asking the right questions and listening for the answers and then collecting that information and designing every process in your company around solving the most frequent things you hear when people are telling you their problems. That's what we did at the payment group. We had, there was, you know, basically 3 to 5 problems that we would hear consistently. Every single thing we've ever invested into and every approach and process inside of our company is focused on solving those 3 to 5 problems. In fact, when we're implementing new stuff, we say, does it impact these problems? If it doesn't, we don't pay for it and we don't spend time implementing it.
Very cool, man. I started listening a lot to Brad Lee's podcast. I don't know if you've ever heard it. I want the bomb button that he has, you know, when he presses the bomb button. I'd be dropping the bomb button like every 30 seconds. Brian, you were on my list, man, to snipe on the podcast. This is not the circumstances I was planning on it, but I don't care. I am so grateful
you
came
on. It's all about the story. This is a great freaking story.
All right, we'll talk soon. Thanks, Brian.
Appreciate you, man. Appreciate you.
There he goes. Man, what a genuinely awesome dude. I respect that man tremendously, not just for coming on for a quick interview when he's dog tired after a long day, but just what he's doing, what he's building, the culture, the movement, the perspective that he offers. So guys, just quickly, like if you're not following Brian Hess, you're doing it wrong. Go follow Brian Hess. I encourage you to listen to his show, Morning Perspective. It's 7:30 a.m. Eastern, Monday to Friday. A little bit early here on the West Coast, but every once in a while when I can, man, I get up at 4:25 and catch his morning show. It's at 4:30 on the West Coast. Incredible show. And if you miss it, you can still subscribe to his podcast. I mean, this guy's unreal. So you can watch the Perspective, or listen, sorry, to the Perspective podcast, which is a replay of the live video he does every morning at 7:30 a.m. You can check that anywhere you listen to podcasts. But he's also got the Pavement Group podcast. So that's the internal company podcast. They put out episodes, just very, very cool information on paving and asphalt. He also has the Top Contractor School podcast, which is Brian Hess's education program. I highly encourage you guys check that out as well, Top Contractor School on Facebook, or you can go check out their website. Just Google Top Contractor School. I'll put in the show notes the links to all those things so you can see everywhere where Brian is. I mean, he's a living, breathing example of what you can do when you push the right buttons. I mean, that's pretty wild. This guy had, he said it himself, couldn't tell you the difference between concrete and asphalt. And now, Pavement Group, like taking over North America. Incredible stuff. There's so much to be learned from that man. So I'm very thankful he popped on for 15 minutes. Very last minute, he powered through, man, sitting in the airport. So very grateful. Thank you, Brian Hess. And thank you guys for listening. I appreciate all of you. We'll be back next week. Keep your stripes hot. Get your paint as much fast as you can. We'll talk to you guys next week.
Support for this episode is brought to you by Everline Coatings and Services. Go check them out, guys. Everlinecoatings.com/stripeit. Learn all about what they're doing. Learn about their franchising model, how you can grow, scale your business faster with Everline. Everlinecoatings.com/stripeit.